I bet you $20 that you can't get on this app and start posting random videos and hit 1,000 followers in a week.
But yeah, you've come a long way even in the content that you were producing. I was peeking around with all the various different content you have up, which was pretty cool. And it looked like in the beginning you were just doing the green screen effect on TikTok. And I literally did a side-by-side comparison of like Andy before, Andy after, with like a proper setup with a cam, bro. But I gotta say, the green screen videos, they were still pretty engaging. So you captured me regardless.
That's good. Yeah. No, yeah. That was actually, looking back, it's so funny to me because every single video I did back then was literally just me and my phone, and there was nothing else that went into it. It probably took me like 2 hours, edited everything on TikTok, and didn't have a script, just like went with the story and just like, I guess, like freestyled it.
But really?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, honestly, because I didn't have to do anything. Like right now, I'll need to set up like a studio. If I come home, I'll need to like actually like send stuff to my editor. I'll need to do a bunch of stuff in the back end, like script writing, stuff like that. Now, back then, it was just take out my phone and just tell a story. So
yeah,
really chill.
I was surprised as well, looking through it all, some of your highest viewed videos are the more lo-fi ones.
Yeah.
Why make the additional investment in making it more hi-fi if the reach is better with the more approachable nature? Like, where did that shift even happen?
So the shift happens because I know the reason. I think the reason for that is I've honestly seen, and from talking to other creators, TikTok, for some reason, God knows why, I mean, I guess relatability, does seem to push the lower quality, like green screen, like people just like sitting there talking head videos a lot more than film production quality, for example. And the reason I ended up shifting is because I did want to make that jump from TikTok creator to YouTube creator. So that's something that doesn't happen if you're just sitting there and you're just like blah, 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 on your phone, and it's like, you know, it's objectively like lower quality than maybe the stuff you'd see on YouTube. So that was the main reason I wanted to start, because I wanted to get into long form content, and that was the way I could sort of bridge the most effectively, just to get used to like filming on camera, get used to not like having to like hold up something every time I'm telling a story. Also, it just gives me a lot more flexibility to have both hands when telling a story. So
very true. Yeah. Dude, I like your approach there too, because you're slowly nudging people in the direction you want to go, not giving them like a massive shift where it's like, boom, here's like 10, you know, 10, 15. I now see you're doing 20 minute videos and it's like super well produced. I would almost describe you, Andy, as like a modern day History Channel at moments.
I've had that. You have.
Yeah. So I get that vibe so much, and it's like well produced, well everything. I could see how it could be a total switchover if folks are just seeing you with the phone, and then it's like boom. Oh, yeah. It's like, bro, what the hell happened to Andy? Like, who gave him a whole production crew? But you're still a one man band when you're actually recording, right?
Yeah.
Dude, that's nuts. That is so wild.
It's not that much work on the back end, actually. If I get the studio and everything set up in place, it's just about like sitting in front of the camera and just like telling a story. So yeah.
Fire. Well, Andy, I want to start today's recording actually with a previous guest.
Oh.
So this all got roped together from the wonderful Annie Long, who just recently came on the show. At the end of every episode, I'm going to do this with you at the end of our episode too. We always ask people who's one game changer you think we should talk to. And without question, without a second of hesitation, Annie was like, "You need to talk to Andy." I was like, "Andy, who's Andy? Like, tell me more." And she says, "All you need to know is he's a master of storytelling." Literally, this is word for word. "Master of storytelling, incredible as a world builder while also juggling being a student at Penn. And he's confident about his path." So I want to start there as a little bit of like a shout out to Annie for connecting this.
Annie is
but so also cool. As the groundwork for this conversation, I want to double into each of these. Master of storytelling, what does world building look like for you? And then what does this confidence in your path all look like? So I'll set that up as the initial moment to start all of this. And where I want to take it first is you are unlike many other creators online. You've carved a path in this hidden category, hidden stories. You're not doing trends for the most part. You aren't featuring the most popular celebrities as well. You're not doing celebrity gossip or the likes, which definitely gets attention.
Yeah.
But instead, you're singing the unsung stories of folks historically and also contemporarily. Why?
Why? I think a part of that, okay, from the very start, yeah, I did obviously the appeal of just mainstream, you know, celebrity gossip. I did that. I did that for a while, actually, not on YouTube, but on TikTok for maybe a good 6 months, like basically news and entertainment news. And yeah, dude, that, oh my goodness, you won't believe the amount of views that gets. Like back then, before that, I was telling normal stories, like history stories. I was probably getting like on average, maybe like 400K to maybe like a couple million if I was lucky. The entertainment stories where you pull in and you're like, oh my God, this person's under backlash for like doing this or whatever, like someone's getting canceled for this. Easily millions of views every single video consistently, just consistently. And there's people who still do it today and they see incredible results, especially on TikTok. But I think the main reason I ended up pivoting from that and just realizing, okay, maybe this is not what I want to do, despite the views, despite everything that was like doing really well on like the metric side, was because it just, I guess to what Annie says, it doesn't actually help me like tell a story. I don't feel like I'm telling a story, more so I'm just like a TikTok news channel that's relaying this like super like tabloid garbage news to people. And I didn't see any meaning in what I was doing and what I was putting out into the internet. So that for me was the main reason why I ended up pivoting away from that kind of content. And the reason I get into hidden stories is because I have this like whole, the whole reason I, or the whole, I guess, mission is a better word for me when telling stories, is the end goal for me is to tell stories that are underrepresented, maybe haven't been covered as much on YouTube. And maybe in the future, my ultimate end goal is to be able to go and maybe travel the world and tell stories that just haven't touched media outlets at all. So media has not picked up these stories, and just go around interviewing locals about stories that should be covered, but just simply haven't. Like they haven't had the opportunity to get it shared out into the world. And I feel like that is incredibly meaningful. Just first of all, that just the first part is just I get a lot of like fulfillment out of creating content where it's stories that no one else has told before. I also think it's very interesting. It's more interesting because people will not have, like, for example, in the true crime niche, you have stories that have been like regurgitated and regurgitated so many times across so many channels. So when you post something like that, they're like, oh, I've seen this before, and there's less like interest, is less peaked. But when you tell stories like the ones that I've like dug up that really don't have that much presence on YouTube, or maybe haven't been shared as much as a lot of the more mainstream stories, I feel like that is incredibly both interesting from like an audience perspective, and also it just sheds light on hidden stories in a way that I feel is really, really powerful. And I think the whole point of the name Hidden Stories is to demonstrate that my channel does cover stories that are sort of like hidden. Obviously, there not many people know about them, so that's the, I guess, the sell, or the what differentiates my channel from the other channels. So yeah, a bit of a long-winded answer there, but that's...
No, I love it. So if it's not the immediate clickbait or the attention-grabbing moment that brings people in, how do you go about thinking about the right stories to tell, right? Because there are so many stories that people don't hear, and there's a whole system built around the stories that people ought to, quote-unquote, hear, whether by news or entertainment or whatever else it be. And you've taken a different path and built your own system around the hidden stories. Take me through that process. How do you look through stories to determine what is actually worthy of telling on your channel?
It's really, I think what's maybe like a common misconception is that stories that don't get heavily publicized on YouTube, on social media platforms, aren't as interesting. And I think that's completely untrue, because I've seen stories that, for example, one of the more recent stories I covered was about this doctor named Dr. James Barry. And this is like one of like a really traditional like history type story that goes way back to like the 1800s. But when I was first researching the story, I looked up on YouTube and I searched up like name Dr. James Barry. There wasn't a single YouTube video over 100,000 views that had ever covered the story. And the ones that did cover it maybe had like 50K, 10K, and they were all like 3, 4, 5 years ago. So this story is very, very, like in YouTube terms, like underground, like people haven't heard of it. And that was just kind of like mind-boggling to me. It was this like really like eye-opening moment, because this is easily probably one of the most fascinating stories I've come across. For like a really, really simple TLDR, it was about this doctor who became a really, really like world-renowned surgeon, ended up performing the first C-section done by a European who managed to successfully have both the mom and the baby survive the procedure. So he was very, very famous. He had pioneered many different medical techniques. And when this guy died, after the 60-year-long medical career as the top-ranking surgeon, one of the top-ranking surgeons in the British Army, people realized that it was a female. It was a woman all along. Like, she had been hiding as a man and pretending to be a man. And just, she wore, like, a special outfit. She had, like, a deeper voice on purpose. And no one had realized throughout her entire life. So after that was realized, I sort of, like, dove into the story again from that perspective. Like, oh, what does this all mean for, like, her entire journey? How did she navigate this? Like, how did she, like, go through this? And what kind of things might she have been experiencing? And I thought that was just so, like, fascinating. I don't know. I've never seen anything like that. But the point is, it wasn't on YouTube. And I thought, that's crazy. So that was one of, like, the perfect, I guess, examples for hidden stories where I don't really feel a need to, like, I guess, like, blow up or over-exaggerate the story's nature because it's less covered and maybe less interesting. I just have a hook that I feel like the audience can really piques their interest, sets them up for the story, and then I tell the story in the way that I feel like would be most interesting and in the way that I feel like both respects the story itself and also manages to make it really interesting for a general audience. So that might mean, like, not having, for example, like a 2-hour video on all the details on the story, just having a very, very minorly condensed story about, like, the main story path. So maybe like a 20 to 30 minute video, for example.
Where did you end up finding this story originally if it weren't for YouTube? You know, I think everything that I find today typically comes from either an algorithmic engine or something that I subscribe to. Where are you looking to find these stories?
I actually don't remember where I found this specific one, but a lot of the stories I find come from Reddit, which I noticed is a really great place for underground stories. Granted, you do need to vet and do your due diligence because there's a lot of, like, random, like, misinformation that goes on there. But I think other than that, I have a folder right here with all, like, my story sources for that I just, like, have accumulated over the past 3 years and I go through. And it's like there's a website called Damn Interesting. There's a website called Modern Mysteries, History Archives, Mysterious Phenomenon, Unexplained Mysteries, Now I Know, How Stuff Works. And other than Reddit and Quora, which are the more like forum type websites that I go to where people are talking about stories, I feel like there's so many interesting stories that just like pop up in the news, for example. Like I saw one recently about this guy who wrote like a best-selling mystery, a murder mystery novel, and turns out the murder he was talking about in his novel resembled a case from the past where it was like almost identical. It was eerily identical, like an unsolved murder. And when police were like, wait a second, this doesn't seem right, like how does he know all these details, and they dug into the story more, they realized that the author had actually committed that unsolved murder. And he had just literally wrote a book about it because God knows why. He wrote a book about it and he got caught that way. But yeah, it's insane. I just think, yeah, if you go through enough rabbit holes like I have in the past, it's just stories are so plentiful. I have like this entire like archive of just stories I want to cover eventually. And it's so long and I don't think I'll ever be able to manage to get to all of it, especially since I'm finding new stories every day. So yeah, it's just about, I guess, taking the time to sit there and just dive through different websites.
Yeah. When did these rabbit holes begin? Oh, what was the moment that started it all?
Long, long ago. I would say definitely not a single specific moment, but even from as early as like second, third grade, I can remember myself just like in class on like our little computer lab, and it's like, oh, you're supposed to be doing like this written homework assignment. And I'm just sitting there like, dude, this is so boring. Either on cool math games or just searching down different rabbit holes. And that was the life, dude. That was very fun experiences because just very, very interesting facts and stories just always piqued my interest from a young age.
Interesting. But, you know, that interest was sparked and yet you weren't yet creating. So talk to me about when that jump starts, where you start to realize, wow, this habit I have of diving into my curiosity could actually turn into something I monetize or even actually produce to give to the world.
Yeah, so this is one of my favorite stories to tell, but basically it never was meant to be a career where I sit down and tell stories. It was always just like a little hobby on the side where it was interesting and that was that. But when quarantine happened in 2020, my school got canceled like a lot of other people's schools. Came back home and I was just bored out of my mind. I was sitting there, I was like, what do I do? And luckily for me, at the time, one of my close friends, his name is Jeff, he was on TikTok a lot. I was on TikTok a lot. Everyone was on TikTok a lot back then. It was really blowing up. And he goes and tells me, he's like, you know what? I think this app is really like, it's creating a lot of new creators and it's really like helping people blow up. I bet you $20 that you can't get on this app and start posting random videos and hit 1,000 followers in a week. And I looked at him. The reason he targeted me, before I say that, is because back then I had no social media presence. I was probably like had an Instagram with like a couple hundred followers, but no posts, no profile picture. And I was just sort of like chronically offline. So he wanted to like just like, I guess, like challenge me because he didn't think I would accept it because I literally just never use social media. And I think if it was during the school year where I was busier, I probably would have said no. But since it was over quarantine and I was like, why the hell not? Like, I have nothing else to do. So I started posting, started like coming up with random different ideas, like random trends, random like advice columns, random comedy skits. And none of that did well. It all did so poorly. Like looking back, all of that is still on my page, by the way. If you scroll all the way to the very bottom, it's so funny. They're just there. And it's like me from like 2020 doing like some TikTok dance. But I didn't end up doing well with any of those videos. It did end up reach 1,000. My account did end up reaching 1,000 followers within the week, though. So that was really lucky. I think I had one video that popped off with like 30K views and got me some followers. But yeah, after that, TikTok sort of just draws you in with their like way of like saying, oh, like they give you one video that does well, and then it's like a dopamine rush, and you're like, oh my God, I want more. And I just started experimenting with different niches. And eventually, either by like some luck or just me seeing another person do it on my For You page, I came across like just the idea of what if I just told a story? What if I sat down and actually just maybe used some of the really interesting stories and facts that I had found in the past and really enjoyed and shared them with like a more general audience? Like, how would that work out? And I got so lucky because the very first story I ever covered literally blew every video I'd ever done in the past. I'm actually willing to bet that one story, the first story I ever covered, got more views than the past like 400 videos I created combined.
Wow.
Which is wild. Yeah, it hit like 13 million views in today. It hit 10 million in a couple weeks. It's sitting at 13 today. And that gave me like 200,000 followers on TikTok to begin with. So I was just like blown away. I'd never seen anything like that. And I was like, well, like I can't really stop now, right? It's like I have this audience that follows me for stories. I like telling stories. So it's like sort of a very, very good combination. And I just started telling stories. And from that moment on, it just gradually shifted into something that was a hobby, maybe not even like consciously, into something that I was like, oh, I can actually do this for a living. And I like telling stories. I am finding myself like ways to improve. And it was just a very, very like unexpected thing, but it all stemmed from that one $20 bet. So
fascinating. I think so many of us could probably relate with that, where we get a bet with a friend either to work out for a certain amount of time or read a certain amount of books, but not all of us take it. Why take the bet? What was really going on in your head? Was it just out of pure boredom? Was there a deep chip on your shoulder to become someone who you weren't? What was going on in your head?
Dang, that is a great question. Yeah, basically, I went through a lot of, I think, like insecurities as a kid. So the reason I wasn't on social media was because I didn't ever like the way I looked on images, in camera, in anything. So whenever I had an image of myself, I was like, ugh. And I didn't post it on anywhere because I was like, why would anyone like look at this? It looks like I look awful. So that, I think, was one of the reasons I wanted to try, because I had always felt if I put myself out there, maybe I can like gain self-confidence, maybe I can sort of break through this like mental cage that I'd sort of put myself in where I can't use social media, and I was scared to use social media. So I think I did it more so both as like the bet, where it's like I was bored and I wanted to have fun, but also as a way, and I actually talked about this on my college essay, but as a way to really like break out of my shell and become the person who I wanted to become, which was someone who is more self-assured, more confident, and just in general, more confident with like me as a person and accepting as like who I am and the type of person that I am. So it really goes deeper than just the bet. And looking back, like the amount of confidence that first year on TikTok brought me is just astronomical. Like I remember looking back at one point while creating, and it had been maybe like a year, and I look back at myself in my junior year of high school when I first started creating compared to then, and I was just blown away. Like the amount of like more like the way I held myself, the way I was like thinking about myself, everything was completely different. And it's crazy because that all happened because of TikTok, of all things. It's just like putting yourself out there and not having people be like, oh, like, why are you online? Why are you posting videos? Which is really profound. Like, it was really strange. But yeah.
It's interesting. A lot of folks who post online get that initial negative feedback, I think, before they get the positive feedback.
Yeah.
What were people saying when you started posting on a random account? As many different things as you could try to get to that goal of 1,000. Oh. And how did you beat away those negative comments during that process?
Yeah, dude, TikTok is a brutal place sometimes. It can be a really positive place, but yeah, a lot of the times it's really brutal. And yeah, I was doing like random trends. I remember one really, really funny comment was, I got my wisdom teeth out while I was creating at some point. So obviously I was like a chipmunk. And I posted a video like I would normally post just because like, why not? I thought it'd be funny. And the entire comment section, I kid you not, it was so like, looking back, it was so funny, but it was like, what, in the moment, it was like kind of like jarring almost. But the entire comment section, maybe like 200 comments, were just like, oh my God, like, bro's been eating good lately. Like, this guy has, like, he really let himself go, like, something along that line. And it's so funny in hindsight, but people just did not hold back. And I remember at the very beginning, too, there were other comments about, like, my eyes. There were other comments about, like, just, like, my hair even back then. It was very, very, to a certain degree, comments that were just very, very trolly and negative in hindsight. But the good thing is that definitely was not the majority. The majority of comments back then, to my surprise also, were very, very positive and were just mostly just like, oh yeah, like funny comedy video, and just like, I guess almost like bot like comments like that. But mm-hmm. Yeah, in the very beginning, the comments did really take a hold on my mind, and to an extent, really like when I read one of them, it was almost like this irrational like anger that I had, like, why are you going out there out of your way to like post like negativity into the world and just like shit on someone? But as time went on, I just realized, you know, most of them are trolls and they probably don't actually mean what they say. It's just more so like, oh, I'm just gonna like say something just for the sake of like pissing someone off, and that's it. So I have learned, I guess, recently, and it's hard because yeah, you'll never really fully be able to avoid like the instant feelings of negativity you get when you read a really harmful hate comment. But I have been trying to just basically like detach myself from my channel. So if someone like shits on the me in a video and they're like, oh my God, like you told the story so horribly, which luckily is very, very rare. And I think it are trolls. I just immediately try to like push away those negative feelings and realize, oh, okay, like you have all these people who say like, I really, really enjoy your style of storytelling. I really enjoy how you like frame stories, how you pace them, everything. Why should I listen to this one comment that is like the outlier? Mm. You know, it's just
very true. Do you remember the earliest DM you got from someone giving you support?
The earliest DM I got, I can't say I do. Not the earliest. Yeah, I remember back in the day, I got a like very, very solid support. Actually, like I remember I launched a campaign back then during quarantine on my social media channels, which probably had like, I would say like 60K followers at that point, or maybe more, maybe like that was after, so maybe like 300K. But I did a fundraiser to donate masks to my local community, like hospitals, medical workers. And through like the followers I had on TikTok, I managed to raise like around like $1,000 through that. So that was really crazy to me because I was like, oh, I thought these kids were just like, to an extent, it's like almost like when you start posting, you're just putting yourself out into like this vacuum and it's not real people. It's just like bots or some like algorithm generated nonsense. But no, I think that was like a really like interesting moment because I realized, oh, like there's so many real people who are following me and seeing this stuff. And there's so many like real like humans behind the screen, which was really, really crazy. Like it was like this like eye-opening moment for me in a way.
How do you activate people today in line with that vision or idea of what your community looks like?
So for the how, I'll actually get that first because it's more relevant. The how, for me, I always like told stories, right? So when I did the mass campaign, what I did actually was I told stories about people like healthcare workers. The one story I remember really, really profoundly was this mom who was, you know, had like a couple children. She was a nurse in an ER room and she was putting herself on the line day after day going in for work. At the time, I mean, COVID was really, really popping off. People were dying. It was really, really terrifying. But she was doing that selflessly, even with her children, even with like her family. And she just did not put herself first and was just thinking about her patients. And I remember seeing that on social media, like a post on Instagram where it said like, oh, she'd work like an 18-hour day. And then it showed a photo of her taking a selfie and she was just like completely dead. Like that was a really, really, I think, emotional and jarring story because people didn't really realize back then how much work the nurses and doctors were putting in. So stories I've realized are very, very powerful and can really, I guess, change people's lives, first of all, and also just be able to act as a sort of medium to create change. So for example, I remember they did a fundraiser for her, a GoFundMe, and that raised an absurd amount of money. And that's the sort of thing I think can be really, really powerful. Someone I know who does it really well.
Okay.
Is this man named Mr. Ballin, and he's a storyteller, does true crime. Normal true crime YouTubers are really looked down upon to an extent. They're like almost like sometimes people see them as sort of glorifying really heinous crimes for their own personal gain. But what Mr. Ballin does is he turns his YouTube channel into this sort of foundation where the views he gets and a portion of like the revenue he gets goes towards this foundation that he made that helps out the families that were impacted by the crimes in his stories. So he has like people who can donate to them and get perks for his channel. He has a bunch of other things set up. And I think that's really cool because that goes back to your first question about what kind of world can I see through this medium of just leveraging an audience to create a better world. And that's just about telling stories where people are either wronged or it's an injustice in the world or where someone deserves better. And then maybe leveraging that to sort of enact change, maybe a fundraiser, maybe a petition. And that's the type of impact I want to eventually have. I can say right now I don't have that and I haven't done anything like that. Maybe because that's really, really scary because the idea of putting yourself out there and acting as like this like almost like a putting yourself out there as like a pivot for change is really, really scary in my mind. Even though I've done it in the past, I do think that's something I do want to apply and try eventually, just as I build my channel more and more. And it's just about, I think, being able to share stories that need to be shared and telling people like, hey, this is wrong. This is what we can do to fix it. And that's just a goal to get to that point eventually.
Dive deeper with me on the fear, because I wanna see what's there. I have a feeling there's hesitation for a reason. What are you worried about around placing a campaign around work that you're doing? What play out the worst case scenario for me? What happens if something goes wrong in a fundraiser or campaign around a specific topic?
I actually think it's basically just like the fear of failure. Like you put yourself out there and you say, okay, I wanna enact positive change. And then your video, for example, flops and nothing is done. I feel like that still to this day, even though like a video flopping is pretty much the norm for me. I understand like the feeling, it's normalized. But I don't know, that's a good question. Like, I don't think I fully wrap my mind around that either. It just, something about it is really scary of just putting yourself out there, trying to do this thing and then not having any effect. Like almost like I've built up this world in my mind where I think I have like this massive following, I have all this social influence. And when that fails, when something I try to do fails, it almost like breaks that world and comes to me and says, oh, you actually have nothing. So maybe that's it. But it is like looking at it now, when you ask me that, it is a bit of a logical fallacy because it's just like if you don't do it, how are you ever going to have any social influence, right? How are you ever going to make a positive change in the world? But it's more so just the fear of like doing something like that when I've never done that in the past and I have no like proof of concept that it'll work, which is kind of,
Let's play with the other side of the coin. Let's say you can't fail. Failure is not an option. You're guaranteed 10 million views on the next video you post. What story would you highlight to activate people to change?
Honestly, there's a lot of really, really like stories I've come across in the past that have really like pissed me off in the sense of like either like someone in jail for a crime they did not commit and they're still in jail because of just like the system keeping you in their grasp. Or it's like this situation where a person has like done so much good for the world and they just go criminally unrecognized. And if I had 10 million views, I guess the very first thing that comes to mind would be to tell the story of this man named Mark DeVriest, who I actually covered in a story recently. But the reason I didn't push for more of a campaign through that, I'll tell you the story first, actually, before I get into that. The story of Mark DeVriest goes, he's this guy, as a kid, was known as this genius, was known as a savant, very, very high IQ, lacked people skills, lacked social cues, but very, very smart. And when his dad died, who was his probably his only friend, he went and was supposed to get the tools that his dad had left him in his will, because his dad had worked with him on many engineering projects. But when he went to get the tools, apparently the will had not been probated yet, which basically means it had not been filed. So he was not technically allowed to get the tools. And when he went and got the tools, it was considered stealing. To even though the tools were left to him in his will, he technically stole them in the eyes of the police. And he was arrested and sentenced to 4 years in prison for taking these tools that his dad had left for him. And in prison, just because of how, I think, like socially incompetent he was as a kid, just through maybe like some sort of autism or some sort of like mental illness from his dad's death, he just started trying to really like talk back to the guards. He tried to escape numerous times from prison. And because of his intellect, he managed to successfully escape 7 different times. But he was caught every time, and every single time he was caught, the guards basically like punished him for it. They severely abused him. He was sexually assaulted in prison. He was given a sentence, a new sentence, for every single time he tried to escape. So in the end, he's still in prison to this day. It's been like 40-something years. And there's this is this guy who could have made this incredible impact on society through just creating like whatever. Like he was creating like insane engineering feats when he was like a teenager, like 10. So to put him in prison and to have him stuck there because of this one thing, and have him trapped there because he simply does not know better to just stay there and serve a sentence, he just didn't feel like that was normal. That really, like, to an extent, just hurts me, because I feel like that's A, something that has been lost to society, and B, it's just, I mean, you have this guy who has been in prison for 40 years for something he doesn't deserve. So, and going back to what I was saying earlier, the reason I just told the story, which has not been covered too many times on YouTube, it's more of a popular story than the Dr. Barry one, but still not as popular as it should be, in my opinion. People have launched campaigns in the past, actually, numerous like change.orgs, numerous petitions to the parole boards, and nothing has worked. Like it's already been done many times. There was a documentary that came out about a story that really pushed for change, and nothing happened. And I think the reason I wanted to just share the story and didn't try anything was because I had just seen that it hadn't worked. So maybe that stopped me from doing anything. But if I did know, like guaranteed I had the views, that would probably encourage me to do something more. Like maybe petition like Congress, like, oh, this guy has 100% served his sentence already. He deserves to be free. He has never hurt a single person throughout his 40 years as a incarcerated inmate, or before that for the matter. So if I had that crutch, yeah, I think I would 100% try to do something, which is interesting because I understand why you asked that question. It's just, you never know when you'll get that views. So you should still do it regardless. But yeah, it's just, there's like this mental barrier I need to get past to reach that point, and it's just so hard.
I appreciate you walking through your psychology fully. I feel like you're unraveling your own self-limiting beliefs as we talk, and that's a beautiful thing. So thank you for being vulnerable in that way. Andy, you sit in a very unique position with the influence you have. Also, the stories you get to select in doing so, as you have an audience of what seems to be millions, and probably far beyond that in terms of actual reach, that's just on a subscriber account basis. How do you check yourself in the process of doing all this to ensure that you're living to a certain standard? You're not like the typical news media company that has a whole fact-checking team that goes through everything and ensures ethical guidelines and kind of sit in a journalism role yourself. So how do you view your role as a bit of a pseudo-journalist yourself, but as a one-man team with a personal brand?
The most important thing to me is just ensuring that everything I put out onto the internet is verifiable through some sort of medium online. And the reason I don't say it's like flat out true is because I do believe that everything you see online can't just be taken as truth, but it is with a grain of salt. So as long as there's like this big name media reporter that has covered it, or Washington Times, Associated Press, et cetera, that has covered it, it can be said true in the sense that it hasn't been proved otherwise. So I try to make sure that everything I say in a video can be traced back to some source that is reputable and hasn't like been seen as like blatantly false. And also it doesn't get like blatantly contradicted by another source on the internet, which sometimes happens. But for that just, it's all about me. Like, I do have researchers for my team. I have two researchers who work interchangeably on stories, and they give me the preliminary research. But every single time that happens, I always make sure to go through the actual story myself and dive through all the details to make sure that details are not either like not blown out of proportion, exaggerated, or left out, which does happen occasionally. So I'm actually really glad I do that sort of like fact checking and making sure that everything works out. But it's been something like that from the very start. Like, even like when I first started creating, it's always been like my goal to like brand myself as someone who is beyond the normal like sort of TikTok creator who you see like tells like the story of like this like time traveler who comes to like New York City and like blows up shit and then disappears, and then everyone's like, oh my god, this is so crazy. But if you Google it online, like there's a Snopes article comes up in the first line that's like, this is blatantly untrue. It's just about, I think, wanting to, again, differentiate myself as a more of like a creator who like tells stories that are very, very reputable and doesn't embellish, doesn't exaggerate, and doesn't mislead their audience, which hopefully I've been able to maintain throughout the past 3 years I've been doing this. And I think I have, which is good. But yeah, there's always going to be skeptics, which is why I try to like at least have some sort of, when there's a fact or a story that's very, very like almost on the borderline of being unbelievable, but there are sources and there are like news coverage on it, I always say like, oh, like this has been like verified by Snopes, like this leading fact checking agency, or some other sort of proof that can actually like determine and prove to these people, these skeptics, that oh, like there is evidence to prove that this actually happened. But yeah, I'm a bit of a skeptic myself. So that's the thing. Like, even when I see a story that's been covered and I'm like, oh, this is like low key, it feels like someone could have embellished this, or it feels like it's very hearsay, then I'll try to stay away from that. But most of the time, I feel like I like to have that like freedom of believing stories, for example, from like 300, 400 years ago that people have reported. And it's just fun to think that they did happen, even though it's really hard to verify that they did happen because it's so, so long ago.
Yeah, we're living in a moment of skeptics across the board.
Oh, yeah.
And this is where I think folks like you are a really good example of what happens when young folks and even older folks as well lose faith in traditional institutions and then want to go and find an individual that they can unify around. And in that sense, you've found people to unify around you and the stories you tell. And in a way, you become insulated in that too, both by the positivity and the negativity. How are you trying to burst your own bubble to get out of maybe situations or environments online where you're looking for new stories to tell that keep you comfortable? What's pushing you forward outside of that?
For me, it's always been about, I think for me, just improving the stories that I tell and improving the way I tell them. And that comes in many, many different forms. It comes in many different ideas I've come up with, strategies. But the main thing is maintaining what I like to see as a very like casual style of stories. And I like that because it feels very personal. It's like almost like a campfire. You sit down and there's a lot of people around you and you're just like telling the story. and it's not very retention based. You don't have to sit and you don't have to add like a animation every second of the video. You just tell a good story with a good hook and you let the rest do the talking. And to be able to, I guess, burst my bubble on that and continue expanding further, I do really, really like the idea, and I talked to you about this earlier, of eventually going into some sort of professional, either documentary production, directing, screenwriting, some sort of even in the future, like Hollywood-style storytelling. And that actually, something that really excited me recently was I watched Across the Spider-Verse in theaters 2 days ago. And that literally, I think that's probably one of the favorite movies I've ever seen as of right now, just because of how wonderful both the animations were and the like way the story was carved out and it was positioned. And that really excites me because I saw a lot of like the strategies that I tell in my own stories on YouTube that were done to sort of like increase like the awe of like a reveal, or to like be able to tell the story in a way that's incredibly engaging in that movie itself. And that's a project that really, really excites me, just like what, even watching it, not even from a creator perspective. So I would love to eventually work on something like that, just being able to tell stories that maybe not necessarily are true, but just tell stories in a way that are like incredibly captivating, powerful, convey emotions. And a part of that is just being able to like continue to scale my own brand and be able to like tell stories better on my YouTube channel right now, which is it's a work in progress always. And a part of that is also just meeting people like you, Asher, and other people who I gain inspiration from and can talk to and learn about different styles of storytelling and work and content. And it's just, it's really nice because you meet people and then you become friends with them and then you meet more people. And it's really, really nice to talk to other creators, just pick their brains and see what they're working on.
I love that. Well, much love to you back as well. You've kind of burst my bubble in many ways, just taking a look at your content, especially down the vein of the hyper baiting and the weird emojis that'll pop up and all the various different, your content is a great example of taking a medium that's viewed as fast, slowing it down and still maintaining reach. Which there's the zeitgeist right now is like you need to be super engaging. Everybody's, you know, got the 8 second time span. There's no other way to engage young folks. And yet you get to pull people into a world by showing the opposite. It's very much a pendulum that swings from one side to the other. And I'm hoping for a further emergence in what I see as slow media, right? So slowing down the pace, documentaries are a great example. Books, I think, are also a great example. You read it at your own pace, as opposed to the alternative of the content overflow in your brain of everything comes at me super, super fast. I can't digest anything. You have hinted a few times about the strategies you use to tell stories. Break that down for me. What are those strategies? Give me that masterclass, the Andy's masterclass in storytelling.
Yeah. Oh my God. I could talk about this for so long, but yeah. For me, it's just I really like the idea of telling a story in a way that is still very, very simple, but also in a sort of like almost like artsy way. You know, you tell it almost in a way where it's like untraditional to the way that you would expect people to just tell it. And what I mean by that is the traditional way is you sit down and you tell a story linearly. Of course, you tell a story. It's like this happened and then that happened and then that happened, which is interesting and which in and of itself is a very like simple and easy way to tell a story, and is what actually I see a lot of other channels who do tell stories tell them as. But for me, I really like the idea of being able to take maybe, for example, the most interesting part of a story and really build around that as like a like almost like a critical moment of that story and build up to it in a way that it isn't entirely linear. So maybe you tell like a specific portion of a story at the very beginning, and then you sort of build your way up to this massive reveal that is really, really interesting. Or if it's a story that has a really, really interesting backside, like a really interesting like middle to like end portion, and the beginning is a bit slow, then I'll have like a maybe like a stronger hook that alludes to some of the parts in the past, parts in the longer, more later parts of the video, where you can really like, I sit down and I watch it again and I'm like, oh wow, this part is really, really fascinating. So I have a hook that leads to that. But it's all about like, I think, being able to pace the story of itself in of itself. And the way I like to do it is I always have stories in a way you have them paced in a way that is very, very slow in the parts in the beginning, the intro. So you sit down and you're telling like a kid's backstory, their how they were raised, their childhood. And then when you get into the parts of the story that are a lot more like action-packed, stakes are higher, it's intenser, there's more like things involved, then I really like to just maybe like, it's subtle, but I really like to basically speed up the way I talk almost, or like make the tone of my voice like louder, more urgent. And I feel like that is all it, like everything I've said so far goes to something that I refer to as, I don't refer to, I've heard this online. I heard this term, just like immersive storytelling, where you sit down and you put someone in the seat of the person you're telling the story as. And I really like that. I think the entire way I craft my stories online is to attain that. And the way I do that is through like different like ambiance noises, different sound effects, music. Everything is in designed sort of to have you sit there and feel like you're in the story and you're immersed in the story and you're almost like experiencing what the character goes through. Which is why another thing I do is I always make sure to flesh out the sort of like inner workings of someone's mind through a story, which I noticed that is very, very rare on the internet nowadays. Like people like tell like maybe like a 10-minute story, and then I take that story and I flesh it out to like maybe a 20, 25-minute story, because I really like cover the details and the in and outs of what that character is thinking in every given moment. Because what a lot of time is, there are like certain like interviews with the people who have been in the stories, and they do talk about like, oh yeah, like I was so like terrified of doing this in this moment, but I just sort of had to and stuff like that. And the crazy thing is, you don't see that in a lot of like the mainstream YouTube channels that tell stories, because they're very just focused on conveying the facts and conveying the stories themselves, rather than actually focusing on the human aspect of the story and what the human itself was focusing on, why they did what they did, which is actually another thing that I really, really emphasize in my stories. Basically, the reason they committed either this atrocious act or they ended up falling down this like sort of like Breaking Bad path. It's all about, I think, if I were to summarize it in one sentence, it's about basically conveying like the human experience that others experience all around the world, and that you might not be aware of yourself. So a lot of times I have a story that is very, very strange, and you have someone doing something where you would never imagine, like it's like so like bizarre that you would never imagine yourself doing it, but it is something that you can understand once you flesh out like their upbringing or something that sort of like encourages this action. For example, in the story of Mark DeFriest, you hear about him like escaping 7 times, even though he only had a 4-year sentence at the very beginning. And you're like, why does he do that? Why does he talk back to the guards? Why does he, you know, do these things that hurt himself even more than he has already been hurt? And once you flesh out his identity as a person who is extremely socially, he does not hang out with many people, does not have many friends, doesn't understand social cues, and is suffering from sort of like psychosis and mental illness, then you start to realize that maybe he doesn't have a choice. Maybe he doesn't realize that the things he's doing to him actually hurt himself. He's just taking the time to just do things that he feels are right in the moment, and it's hurting him, and he's not really able to process the fact that if he continues doing this, it hurts him even more. So it's all about putting yourself in the character's shoes and sort of revealing the deeper and more fleshed out stories that sort of aren't covered, and the details that are never covered, actually. And I really like that because it tells like A, a more immersive story, and B, it really sheds light, and it gives like, it helps bring these stories the justice they deserve, in the sense that you're not cutting like any important corners. You're actually like delivering a story in its full format and in all of its like important details, which again, like the only person I've seen do this really is this guy named Mr. Ballin. And maybe that's because I don't go out of like consuming too much YouTube content in storytelling. But yeah, I feel like it is pretty rare nowadays.
Why not consume more of your quote unquote competitors?
I have. That's the thing. I think I have in the past. And then I realized that every time I come across a channel that tells a story, I can't sit through it. It feels like the story is almost the same exact way. They tell the story in this like almost like monotonous way. It's like very like linear. It's very dull almost. And I don't know, maybe it's just it's just a specific preference of mine. But when I sit through a story like that, I'm just like, I don't enjoy this. Like, it's like not interesting to me. Which is why I guess I want to find an audience who resonates with that and maybe like have or even introduce people to a style of storytelling that's more like personal, that's more impersonal, sorry, that's more just sort of very casual campfire style storytelling. And it's, I don't know if people actually are into that, to be completely honest. I know I'm into that, but it's all about seeing if that plays out well, I think.
Now having an audience, do you consider what your audience wants from you, or do you try to lean more heavily into what you feel is right to create for yourself?
Did you see the Ryan Ng post yesterday?
I did not, but Ryan's my boy, so I should.
Yeah, he posted about that just yesterday, about how I think audience always comes last in his creative process. And I don't actually agree with that. I think for me, the audience does always come first. And it's just being able to, I think, recognize the fact that YouTubers, they need to, like, no matter what you create, what dictates whether your video will do well is the algorithm and is like the fine comb analytics. So if you don't put that into consideration, if you don't put like the people who are watching your content into consideration, I really don't think it's easy to see success and to have your videos like be shown to a wider population, which is my end goal, which might not be his end goal. So that makes sense. But I think for me, I really, really like the idea of tailoring stories around very, very generally understandable concepts and ideas, so that if you put anyone from basically anywhere on earth, if you take a translator, of course, sit down and watch one of my stories, they will be able to understand the entire story path. So that means like really like cutting out any of like the cultural norms that come with specific parts of the world, or maybe explaining them in more depth so that it's really accessible to anyone, which is something I don't know if other creators do. I'm pretty sure they do that, but it is something that I've tried to be more intentional with, just because it makes the most sense to me in order to, like, I guess, have the videos more accessible to a larger audience.
No, that totally makes sense. I think you're seeing an emergence, too, of creators trying to be multilingual in their approach with translations, and then also platforms trying to incentivize more closed captioning in different languages. So it's smart. You're giving yourself that global reach.
Yeah.
If you had to describe your audience, how would you, like, as a person, anyone who watches Andy, take me through their psychology as to who they would be, what they like about what you do. I'm curious, from the man who is creating for the audience. I'm actually always curious how creators view their audience, as I tend to think that there's a larger gap than most would realize, given how large audiences have become. But they stop creating for one person and they create from an amalgamation of folks, and then it turns into, well, I don't really know my audience. So who do you think your audience is? What are they like?
Yeah, so from the comments I've seen on my basically the most reoccurring, like, I guess, like, compliment that people tell me is that the style of storytelling is very like casual, like I mentioned, and engaging. So what I mean by that, for people who don't recognize or watch my channel, it's a lot of what I tell when I tell a story is actually just me on screen telling the story. So maybe I'd say, like, on a given video, maybe 30% of the video is me sitting there and just, like, there's no animations, there's no B-roll, no images. I'm sitting there and I'm, like, sort of telling the story, and I'm, like, sort of demonstrating and trying to visually show what's going on through just hand gestures and being able to convey things through, like, facial features, through just me being there as a storyteller. And I think that the reason people compliment that and say, like, oh, I really enjoy the style of storytelling, is because they, like me, really enjoy the style of, like, more personal storytelling, where you're sitting there, you're conveying the story to almost like I'm sitting here and you're right in front of me as, like, a friend, and I'm conveying the story to you directly, one-to-one. And this is different from most of the content on YouTube, because it's most of the content on YouTube is conveyed in a way that it's like, oh, you know, it's like it tells the story, and it's not more so like trying to be intentional with telling the story in a way that it's like, oh, I'm talking to you as, like, an individual. And if I were to say, like, a single person to represent the entire audience, it would be maybe like I don't even know how to describe it, a, like, campfire story enthusiast, which is something that is actually also what Mr. Ballin, the guy I was talking about earlier, who does a really good job of sort of, like, doing this style of content, also understands. And I think he also refers to his audience as that sort of people. So it's just about like finding the style of people who like are fed up with stories online that are very like told in an impersonal way, like maybe just like regurgitating facts and being able to convey to them a better story. Like,
I love
yeah.
it. No, I love it. Thanks for walking through that exercise. It's always cool to see how people think through it. I want to round out this conversation with three final questions that we ask to every guest. So we call them the DP3. The first of which is, what's something that you've recently changed your mind on, Andy?
I think our convo in New York changed my mind on a lot of different things, actually. But for probably the most, I guess, like relevant, I think it is the fact that when you have a, we, I know we were talking about this. I actually don't know how to phrase this, but for me, just completely like, I guess, unrelated to the video itself, the videos that I create, when you have a job like social media and like content creation, where you basically almost like have the opportunity to work on it every minute of the day. There's no set schedule that you have to sit. It's almost like your work is your life at that point. I realized that it's like this actually directly comes from the convo I had with Max. And I was talking to Annie about this just yesterday, and she was like, oh wow, I want to try this as well. But yeah, he was saying how you can literally still set yourself boundaries for like when you want to work and when you want to like just set time for yourself to like chill. And for me and for him, actually, what he said, he does like a sort of like almost like a 9 to 5 sort of like breakdown for work. And I was like, why not give that a shot? Because for me, I find myself almost like always, if that isn't the case, if I don't have that sort of set schedule, I just work all the time and whenever I have free time, and maybe like find myself just getting completely burnt out. So I was like, why not set myself a time and say, okay, right now I'm gonna work really hard, diligently, get a lot done. And then afterwards, I can look forward to the fact that I have maybe like the night to just like hang out with friends and go like hoop and go lift and go like watch a movie or whatever. And I tried that out, not gonna lie, soon after I came back from New York after talking to him about that. And after literally just like 2 to 3 days, I could immediately already tell that it was gonna work out really well just because of like how efficient being able to set like time for you made it so that I knew that I wasn't gonna work later in the day. So I knew that I had to finish what I wanted to finish then. So I would be finishing stuff earlier, quicker, and I would also be giving myself more time to just relax and hang out and have fun, which honestly is like a, I can't see any negatives with that. It's like a win-win-win-win-win. So that was really, really interesting because before I was under the impression that you can't really like do a 9 to 5 while being something that traditionally is not a 9 to 5. But I don't know. I like the breakdown. I actually really like having the schedule like that. Yeah.
For sure. I've seen people refer to this experience as Parkinson's Law, the idea that your work will grow to the amount of time you allocate toward it. And by that same token, it'll also shrink to the amount of time you give it.
I've heard of that. Yeah.
It's a good reminder for myself as well as I start to see pieces of my life fall away
Oh, yeah.
as a singular focus comes into mind, growth, whatever have you, building a business.
Oh, yeah.
And then everything else just disappears. It's like my whole life is now this thing. And some might say you need that kind of effort to build something that doesn't currently exist. But I don't know, my hot take there is you can also set the appropriate boundaries to ensure that you actually are fired up to do the work instead of burning yourself out. So I agree with that. I also thank you for giving me that reminder because I should probably do the same exercise. Second one of the DP3 is, you know, you talked a little bit about your ideal audience being campfire storytelling enthusiasts. Let's talk about the folks who don't like that. What would you tell to the critics out there who say, Andy, he tells all these stories, he's monetizing off of people's trauma, he's projecting stories for virtue signaling or whatever have you? What would you tell folks that are naysayers to your content?
I really like that second question. That is a, I think that is a really, really like thought-provoking question. Dang. Yeah, I think the main thing would be, and this actually, I actually had a convo exactly like this, very, very similar convo a couple months ago, where I had pretty much the exact comment that you just said about like, oh, like you're telling other people's stories and you're benefiting from it. So why, what, like you're a shitty person. Why should we listen to you? And this was a DM I got on Instagram, and at first I was like, dude, this is such a stupid comment. Like, why would I reply to this? And then after thinking about it, and after, like, I always, like, try to, like, sit down and put myself into their perspective to realize, like, is this a troll? Is this someone who just, like, is actually, like, leveraging, like, a fair point? And after thinking about it, I was like, yeah, I mean, I can see why people would think that. So maybe I sit down and actually, like, try to learn more and try to explain, like, what my thoughts are. So I think what I explained was that by telling these stories, what I'm trying to do is not obviously, like, virtue signaling, not trying to, like, just immediately, like, benefit from it personally and not provide any sort of value whatsoever. But what I try to do is, of course, and this will cover the second part of your question first and not, like, the campfire naysayers yet. But for people who think it's, like, virtue signaling and sitting down and just, like, taking other people's stories and personally benefiting from it, I think that is very almost like a logical fallacy, just because by doing this, I'm actually sort of in my world, what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to have more eyes on the stories that I'm covering, which is why, hence the term hidden stories. But by doing so, I hope to not only provide some sort of, like, insight into people for how they, like, view the world and how they think about people, like, oh my god, like, there's these experiences that people go through that maybe cause them to have, like, a very, very tough adulthood where they struggle to deal with people, where they do questionable actions and treat people in questionable ways. So maybe you have to understand the really their psychology behind some of the actions they do and be, like, more accepting of just people who do things and more understanding of maybe what why things happen. And B, being able to just, as I said earlier, make a difference and be able to create eventually this sort of, like, positive change, do actions and do stories that could be changed, could end up making a positive benefit for a person or for a group of people. And by doing so, like, yes, obviously, I am helping myself make a living in the process. But for me, the reason I do this and the reason I tell stories is because it's just, I think, A, it's very personally fulfilling. I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't enjoy it. I'd be probably sitting down on, like, a traditional finance job, as you probably thought about in the past. But I really think the true value of what I do is being able to share stories that people haven't heard of and bring more attention to stories that are more deserving of attention. And that isn't just stealing stories, because sometimes stories don't, literally people just don't know about them. And by helping convey a story in a very engaging way to a group that hasn't heard it, that will help me basically, or not help me, that will help people, I guess, learn about things, first of all. And second of all, be able to, again, draw attention to stories that should be covered. So that's for that. And for the campfire naysayers, like, I really don't know, man. Like, maybe some people's attention spans have been killed, or maybe it's just not their cup of tea, which I understand. And I obviously encourage anyone to watch one of my videos and stories before saying anything, because I do really deep down think it's very general and can be enjoyed by anyone. But it's also just, if it's not their cup of tea, I can't really do anything to really convince them. And it's just being able to enjoy a story that's more, like, personal and less, like, I guess, like, almost like sitting down and just watching a YouTube video. But yeah, like, I don't know if you have any thoughts about that. It just seems like it's hard to convince someone to do something when and they just don't enjoy it. Yeah,
for those kind of folks, it's like, it's not your cup of tea, all good. It's getting comfortable with the fact that not everyone's going to think what you do is incredible.
Exactly.
Andy, what I appreciate about the through line in all of your responses is you've demonstrated a significant amount of empathy for people, both those who are in your world and outside of your world, right? Mm. You're, like, positioning yourself in every given way. Let me think about, for the folks who I'm telling their stories, how would they react? For my audience, how would they react? For myself, how would I react, or how would I approach things? And with empathy, my take, and I think the take of the show and a lot of the work that we try to do, is with empathy comes hope. So what's giving you hope in the world right now?
I think a lot of stuff. I think in general, I like to surround my, like, news feeds with very, very positive stories. And for a time, actually, I exclusively only covered positive stories on my channel. And that lasted for, I think, around, like, half a year almost, where it was just, like, every single day it'd be a story about, like, resilience or inspiration or never giving up. And by the way, I actually cannot run out of those stories. I still cover them to this day. It's just a very, very large pool of stories online of people doing incredible things and being incredible humans. And just being able to see that and see very, like, you almost, like, daily actions of very human things and just being a good person and helping someone out when you could have not, or doing something that you have no like obligation or to do, it's really, really empowering to see that there are like so many good people out there. And by, I think, creating this sort of sphere in your mind where you realize that the world is inherently like full of good people, then you will put yourself in a position to do more good for other people, just because you know that for the majority, people are in fact good. And I took a business ethics class this year, and that's actually one of the main takeaways, is that people do seem to be inherently good, and the people who do bad things are often also inherently good. They just come across a situation that really like spirals outside of their control, causes them to do something that's they would later regret. But it's the idea of just being able to basically just, what's the word? You pay it forward. You pay the good forward that you see in the world that other people have done for you in the past. And by doing so, you're hoping that other people who you are good to will also pay it forward. So it's just this cycle of being good, helping other people be good. And then hopefully it continues.
Cosmic karma, my friend. Cosmic karma. I like that. Andy, I want to roll the red carpet out for you. How can people plug into your world?
Yes. So you can find me on basically every podcasting platform at Hidden Stories. You can find me on my main YouTube channel, which is where I dedicate most of my time for my videos. It's my name, it's Andy Jang. And if you want to follow, I guess, up with life updates, which I cover occasionally, you can find my Instagram at Andy with two Y's. Jang, and there's an underscore after that, but if you search up on Instagram, it should pop up. Yeah, it's a bit convoluted.
Sweet. Andy, you're the man. I appreciate you coming on. Our chat in New York left me with a lot of stirrings around ideas and things you can build and things to talk about, so I'm glad we were able to set this down to record. And a big thank you again to Annie for connecting us originally.